This is the What is Black podcast, where we aim to defy the myth of a black monolith. For more information, visit whatisblackpodcast.com. This mixcast is brought to you in part by the Pittsburgh Office of Public Art. For more info, visit opapgh.org.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What is Black podcast. I am your host, Jason McCoy, and I'm sitting here with Brian Broom. What's up, Brian?
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I am doing fairly well. I had come to Jesus or come to Star-Lord or come to whatever entity you believe in moment today. And it's like, I recognize, like, as I'm getting older, I have like a shorter fuse and things just frustrate me way more. It's everything. It's like people, it's like work, it's like myself. And I don't think I was this way when I was younger. And I'm starting to understand why old people are perceived as crotchety so much, or like the elderly are like perceived as crotchety so much, because it's just like, I don't have time anymore. And I'm wondering if there's like some type of correlation between like the older you get, like the shorter your fuse is, or like the less you're willing to tolerate.
Well, for me, it's like quite the opposite, because I am an old person. And I think the older I get, the less frustrated I get, because the more I'm able to just let bullshit go, you know, like, you know, I have a better understanding of what should affect my mood and what is just, you know, like, I can't deal with that, particularly like you said about people. You know, like people, I'm not a very social person. I'm not somebody who's going to be out like trying to meet and greet people. I'm just not that person. But when I was young, I used to be. Now, as I got older, and also since I got sober, I'm like, oh my God, people ain't shit. Like, I just really, you know, I rarefy my social circle, like so small to like who I talk to and who I hang out with. So I'm finding that it's just getting a little, it's getting a little easier. I'm less frustrated. You know, now also it helps that I'm kind of doing something that I want to do in terms of work, you know, those kinds of things. But I'm just able to let things go more easily.
Yeah, I can see that. And I feel like that may have been, it's the reverse for me, because like when I was younger, I was just like, hey, let things go. And that also got me into a lot of trouble, which just letting too much go and not stick it up for myself enough. And so now that I've come to like a turning point in my life, maybe it's, you know, midlife crisis or what have you, but I've come to a point in my life where it's just like, I'm not going to let like certain shit slide. And so I get frustrated so easily, and I'm trying to work on it, like, you know, become a better person and like chill out.
Exactly.
But, yeah. And oddly, I started like, I'm sober-ish, sober adjacent, in that I only drink like to celebrate. I don't drink to de-stress or anything like that. And even then, it's just like, I'll have a beer or like soju or something like that.
I used to drink all day, every day. And that added to the stress in my life. I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, I think just getting sober, just off everything, has just been the greatest gift that I've been able to like give to myself. You know, life is a lot easier when there's just like not a whole lot of drama. Cause when you're drunk all the time, there is drama falling from the sky. So, you know, again, like, you know, it's not like I don't get frustrated and I don't have bad days and I don't let certain things bother me. But, you know, that stuff that, you know, that sort of, like I said, that superfluous stuff, like so-and-so said this and so-and-so said that. And, you know, I'm like, I can't be bothered with all that. I'm not 19. Like, you know, and the minute somebody tries to bring that kind of thing into my life, I'm like, I really can't. I don't have any use for you. And, you know, I'm good for cutting people off. because you find out, you know, you find out who has your best interests at heart, you know, real quick when that kind of stuff happens, you know. So, yeah, I'm sorry you had a bad day. I'm hoping that the evening will be better.
Well, like I said, I'm going to partake in a few sips of soju, and then we're going to set a fire up in the backyard and like start to, we're going to like do our seasonal burn.
Nice.
Yeah, where we just like, you know, burn all of our troubles away in a big fire in the backyard.
Well, happy fire burning. I hope all your troubles just go up in smoke. And make sure the wind's not blowing. Make sure they don't drift towards me. I'm in the East Hills. Okay.
You don't want that negativity, that smoke monster to go over to you.
I'm going to just be standing outside with a fan trying to blow them back to you. Like, I hope it's fun.
So you actually, like in your memoir, Punch Me Up to the Gods, you briefly touched on,
I got to light my peace candle.
Okay, please. We need all peace.
All right, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
In your memoir, you talked about your relationship with alcohol and substance abuse. And I am also like, I'm recovered from substance abuse. Was at a point where it's just like, I needed to drink like every day from like pretty much the moment I woke up to like, you know, the moment I fell asleep, just to like get through the day. Like I couldn't function. I couldn't create. I couldn't do anything without the help of like alcohol or some substance, which is why I say I'm sober-ish now. Cause like, I don't drink at all during the week. And if I do drink, it's only in celebration. And so like one thing that for the longest time I didn't realize was attributing to my alcoholism was that I was depressed. Mm-hmm. Like I had diagnosed major depressive disorder and anxiety. And I too, like social anxiety, I can't be around people for too long. In fact, I had like two engagements in one day on Wednesday, and I'm still recovering.
Wow. Yeah. It takes, you know, if you have that particular issue, which I do as well, you know, people don't realize like being social just saps your energy. Like you are exhausted. You know, when the book came out, you know, we were still in quarantine. And part of me, you know, don't take this the wrong way. I don't mean it. Like I was glad about it. I wasn't glad that we were in quarantine, but I didn't have to go like on book tour and, you know, go all around and meet all these like new people. Everything was on, you know, Zoom, which, you know, I still find a little bit stressful, you know, meeting new people on Zoom. But like, you know, you make a really solid point because I was just telling somebody earlier today, I talked to a group of school kids from Miami. And it was a group of Black kids, and I was talking about addiction. And I was telling them, you know, somebody being an addict, you know, an alcoholic or a drug addict, it's not about fun. They aren't partying.
Right, right.
You know? They aren't like just a good time in it. It is to cover up, or it is to ameliorate a deeper mental issue. They're either depressed or they're anxious or they're both, or they're dealing with some sort of unresolved trauma. It's not about having fun. Nobody is an addict because they want to be. They are an addict because, you know, there's something in their life that is driving them to that substance that makes them feel better. And that's when you try to take it away, they get real upset. You know, unfortunately for the harder drugs, there comes like a physical addiction as well. You know, the whole reason why I drank so much and why I used so many drugs for so long because I'm certain of this, I was dealing with undiagnosed anxiety and undiagnosed depression. I feel it now that I'm not using. You know, I have moments of such anxiousness and down moments, you know, and I'm medicated, you know. And those things, I'm like, oh yeah. When they come up, I'm like, oh yeah, this was what I was trying to, you know, drown in Jack Daniels. I wish people understood that about addiction.
Yeah, so it's wild too when you like have that moment of clarity, like once like you're off whatever substance it is that you abuse for like a while, and then you have to come to terms with the things before that would trigger you. You would just like, you know, drink it away or like, you know, drown it in alcohol or drugs. But now it's like when you have to deal with it and like figuring out ways to deal with it, like the challenge of just like, how am I going to do that without the aid of like alcohol? Like, how am I going to talk to this person, or how am I going to network, or how am I going to just like go to Target? I can't even go to Target without taking a shot. How am I going to go to Target?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, for me right now, and I'm still navigating it, you know, I don't have like the magic bullet, in order to be able to do those things. Like, you know, sometimes I just, I'm like, just power through it. You know, when I'm going into a new situation with new people, I'm like, just take a deep breath and power through it. You know, I have this thing I call Other Brian, you know, who is just this dude that takes over for me in like social situations, you know, who can talk to people and who can maybe make the occasional joke or say the occasional pithy thing or whatever, you know. I let Other Brian take over. But the thing about letting him take over is that I, the whole Brian, am exhausted afterwards. You know, like I had a few things this week too, where I had to go out and go see people and talk to them. And like, you know, I just get home and I don't want to do a damn thing. I just want to lay down and eat cookies. And, you know, so you need that healing time. You know, when you're out there, you know, being social, if you suffer from social anxiety, people don't understand it, you know, particularly like extroverted people. They're like, why don't you just go talk to people? You know, they don't get it. Like, and there's no way to explain it to them, you know, that this kind of thing is difficult for me. It didn't used to be. I used to be out and about all the time when I was drinking. You know, I thought I was a people person. And then once that alcohol and drugs got taken away, I was like, oh my God, these people ain't shit. I'm scared of all of them. I'm going to go home, you know? So I'm still navigating those things myself.
Yeah. And again, you get that, like the alcohol, the drugs, whatever, you take that out of the equation. It's just like, oh, I'm like bare.
Yeah. I mean, you're all strung out. There you are, all strung out by your little self, like Toni Morrison said, you know, and what do you got? You know, all you have is like yourself. And then if you couple that with like, you know, I personally have, you know, I'm still working on my self-esteem issues. I'm like, you know, if all I have is myself, well, shit, I ain't nothing. You know what I mean? It just right. It loops around on itself. And you can get yourself into a really exhausting situation emotionally.
Yeah. And so like, as I was like, you know, hearing you talk now and after reading the book, it's just like, there are so many overlaps in like both of our upbringing and coming to terms with our, like who we are ourselves. And like the first thing I noticed was like the spelling bee. I intentionally threw my spelling bee. Like I sold it because I was afraid of what everybody else in the class was going to like then talk about me. Cause I was like a nerd in school. Like I just loved learning. I love reading. I just love knowing shit. And I got asked to go to the being a spelling bee. And it was like they gathered everybody in the auditorium and like I'm on stage and like people were clowning me beforehand and I'm on stage. And it was like, I remember the word specifically. It was potatoes. And I threw it. I threw in an extra E because I was just like, I don't want them to see how smart I actually am. So I'm going to throw it on the simple ass word potatoes. And I got clowned for, you know, throwing it for losing right. The potatoes. So it's just like, it was a win, because it was a lose-lose.
That is so gratifying for me to hear. Like, because, you know, this book is really strange to me because I didn't want to write a book, but now that the book is out there, like I'm hearing from so many people, you know, a lot of different kinds of people from all different walks of life and all that stuff. And I'm hearing from so many people like that exact same thing happened to me. And it's so gratifying to hear it come from, you know, other Black men as well. You know, like that exact same thing happened to me. Like, I remember my spelling bee story, which you read, you know, I was like, well, they don't like me anyway. And this is the way that I can prove myself, you know, by winning the spelling bee. And maybe some good things will happen. And then, of course, you know, I completely chunked it by, you know, you remember the word I screwed up?
I don't because I have a terrible memory.
it was foreign.
Oh, okay.
I will never forget how to spell that word until the day I die now, you know, but, you know, it's so amazing to hear people say, you know, that exact same thing happened to me. Like I've had like just about every story in the book, I've had somebody come up to me and say, you know, it wasn't the exact same thing, but it was kind of like that. And this is what happened to me. And so I get to hear, and in this really great way, you find out that you're not alone, you know. And you know, growing up, I thought these experiences were, you know, singular to me. And it's great to know that I'm not that special, you know, that it, these kinds of things happen to other people. And it was James Baldwin who said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, you know, you think your experiences are, you know, your pain is the only pain in the world.
Right, right.
So you read, and then that unifies you with everybody who has lived before you, everybody who's living now, and everybody who's ever going to live. And that is, I'm glad you threw the spelling bee so you could just today tell me that story.
Yeah, that was the only reason I threw it, because I was like, one day I'm going to speak to Brian Broome and I'm going to tell him about this experience.
I'm going to tell him the exact same thing that happened to me. But, you know, and that what's also interesting about it is that you said, you know, people were clowning you. People were clowning me too. And I wonder what that's about, you know?
Like, I don't know. And it's like, I mean, I know it's not exclusive to like just, you know, the Black community, but it was just like, it's just a thing where education or just being smart is like one of those things that was just like frowned upon. Like,
do you think girls deal with it as much as boys do?
I don't think so. I think because the expectation of boys is that you're supposed to be basically strong and stupid. Like, yeah, you're just supposed to be strong, stupid, and like that's it. And girls are the ones who are supposed to be like smart, but yet still subservient in like this wild way.
Yeah.
We're just fucked up.
And I was telling them again, I was talking to those kids today, and I was like, it's also constructed. You know, you don't have to be a certain way because this culture is telling you that that's what you should be. If that's not you, then don't do that, you know? And when I was growing up, you know, I was, you know, a weirdo anyway. And, you know, and so, you know, I couldn't find a way to fit in, you know, which I think is evidenced in the book. No matter what sort of like community I ran to, you know, I'm gay. So like I felt like Black homophobia. And then there's just the racism that exists in the culture in general. And then I didn't really fit in with other gay people either. I mean, it was just very isolating. Until I found out you don't have to run to any community. Just find your people, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like a magnetic. It's just like whatever you put out, like, you know, people will be drawn to it or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And also like in a different context, it's just like whatever you think about, somebody has done.
Yeah.
And so like that's why I also like to create, because I can think of myself as like myself and what I create as like a beacon for other people out there who are like in similar situations or like grew up similar or like, you know, similar backgrounds, whatever, or just have that one thing that they can relate to. They can see my work and say like, oh, yes, me too. And like with writing too, like with your book, there were so many points in it. I was just like, oh, shit. Me too. Like Twan, there's been so many Twans, and I really think if you want to see like what a community or society is all about, take public transit. I've ridden on so many buses in Pittsburgh specifically, but like my entire life, and trains where it's just like, yes, this, it's like you get realness.
Yeah. I write on the bus all the time. I tell people this all the time. People, you know, my writing students, I'm like, go on the bus and just listen, you know, and watch people and just like take notes. Like that whole story about Twan is from a bus trip. You know, it was like the 61C or something like that that I was on, you know, going downtown. You know, and Twan definitely, you know, he's somewhere in this city, somewhere tonight, you know, but he definitely, in terms of the narrative, I used him as like a, you know, a literary device. He sort of represented like, you know, every Black boy to me who is taught, you know, whatever you're feeling, shove it down, you know, and you have to exude this, you know, this veneer of strength at all times, you know, and that, and strength is defined in this sort of bizarre way. It's unemotional. It is, you know, aggressive. It is, you know, all these things that I don't necessarily think strength is. So, you know, it's all very constructed. And, you know, I learned that pretty late in life, but I think for a very long time, it damaged me, you know, emotionally to the point where I was just drinking all the time, you know, to shove down my own pain, you know?
Yeah. All that just like usually ends up in some form of trauma. And then like, you have to deal with that trauma. And if you're not equipped in ways to deal with it in a more positive. It, you know, almost always ends up in self-harm, harm to others, violence. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, punching somebody in the face. It could just be like, you know, like drinking to excess or like risky behaviors, et cetera.
Yeah. Like my father, for instance, you know, my father, after he lost his job, you know, my father was sort of insecure anyway. You know, I know that now, just in hindsight. But he took that insecurity out on my mother, you know, because he wasn't able to deal with it himself. It became her fault, you know. And so, yeah, it's exactly like you say. If you don't deal with your own shit, somebody else is going to have to deal with it in one way or another. And that is the least, you know, strong thing I can think of. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's the way I think about you know, being a strong person is like you have to be able to deal with your own scars and go through the world and try to learn as much as you can and try to treat people well. You know, I know that now. I didn't used to know that. I didn't used to treat people very well at all. So I definitely know.
Yeah, because we weren't equipped to like, you know things like that. Like it definitely wasn't something that was taught. It's like not something that you learn unless you know after going through it, or you're prepared by like someone, an elder or a parent or something like that.
Or you go to rehab.
Or rehab.
That's kind of where, That's where all of this stuff started to become clearer to me. Like when I went to rehab, I was like, oh crap. Like, you know, oh, this is what's wrong. This is what's wrong. You know, I'm foisting all of my problems onto other people and onto myself in a very unhealthy way.
Yeah. And like, there's so many, like, I mean, there's so many instances of like, you know, Twans and just how with boys specific, well, no, both boys and girls, when they're young, just like the sexualization of them. Just like, I remember remembering back of being like one of my mother's friend's little boyfriend and how like, at the time, I was like uncomfortable, but also didn't know how to process it. And she gave me attention if I was just like, okay, yeah, whatever. And like thinking back and seeing it happen with like, you know, kids now, it just like makes me feel wild uncomfortable. And I want to say something, but like, it's not my kid. And I never know, like, what are the like boundaries to which like, I can be like, you know, that's actually quite damaging to your kid and maybe you shouldn't be saying things like that.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, you know, I there's a scene on the bus, like speaking of Twan again, you know, a woman got on the bus and, you know, he was like 2 and she said to his father, like, oh, you're going to break some little girl's heart. You're going to be a heartbreaker. You're going to break girls' hearts. I'm like, why are you saying that? That's weird. Like, what, for, like that's something to be proud of, first of all. And it's just weird, you know. I know what you're saying. I think we just start hammering these weird like gender roles onto human beings like very, very early so that they know nothing else. They know that this is the thing that I'm supposed to be. It starts with like pink balloon or blue balloon, and it just goes from there, you know. Like when she started saying, oh, you're going to break girls' hearts. You're so cute. I was like, that is so, I'm trying not to cuss. Like, that is so weird. Like, it's weird. Don't say that to a kid. Don't say that to a little girl. Like, she's going to break little boys' hearts. Like, it just feels strange to me. And I know people are saying like, oh, it's just something cute that you say to kids. But I think it starts a process of, you know, of just, I don't want to say brainwashing, that's too harsh, but it starts this weird process of setting them on this path that you have decided for them and making sure that they stay on it, regardless of who they are as people, as individuals.
Like conditioning almost, like.
That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Conditioning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't forget to share and rate the What is Black podcast 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps us defeat the algorithm monsters.
So where do you find freedom?
I gotta tell you the truth. Like, I just really like to be by myself. You know, sometimes I wonder if I'm hiding or if I just really like to be by myself. Where do I find freedom? Like, I, you know, I like to be alone, just like reading. It's rare for me to find an unanxious place. You know, like I'm working on some level of anxiety, like at all times. And freedom is just any place that I can snatch some freedom from that anxiety, because I got a low, steady hum of anxiety going, like right now, like 10 minutes ago, I will have it later tonight. So when things are quiet, and I can just sort of gather my thoughts and I can relax and read or just stare off out the window, you know. I also find freedom with my friends. I have really good friends. So lucky to have like my friend Brian and my friend Disha and my friend Jason. I mean, just people who make me laugh. Those are the places that I find freedom. Like that sounds so boring. I should be like on top of a mountain,
please.
But it's, I find freedom in really simple places and simple things.
I play video games and that's where my freedom is. Like my freedom is in this pink gaming chair right behind me, just sitting.
I need to know, like, who did that room that you are in? Is that like your bed? What is that?
No, this is incredible. So I converted the mud room into my office when we first bought the house. So this is my office. So the way that it's set up is it's like a perspective illusion. So it looks smaller than it actually is, kind of like the TARDIS from Doctor Who. Oh, it's big on the inside.
Oh, God, you are a nerd.
Yeah, I told you. My gaming setup is like right here, but there's actually like, plenty of space, but it looks like it's right behind me. So yeah, it was me. I painted it electric blue and got like pink lighting and like everything is pink in there because I love pink. All the decoration is just like either some form of neon pink or neon green.
Well, my hat's off to you. That is an incredible space. I like it a lot.
Thank you.
You're getting that from a gay man, so I know about interior decorating.
I appreciate. I receive.
Yeah, I don't know anything about interior decorating. I don't.
I figured that was a good joke. But it's like interesting too, because when I was reading like the book, there were so many things, like I was saying earlier, it's just like I relate to a bunch of this, I relate to a bunch of things in it, just growing up and being like kind of like an outcast in my own community and just being like weirdo. And while I identify as like straight cis, it's just like there was just a lot of things that were just resonating with me and made me, realize that there's a lot of like commonality and universality in the story that you tell in your memoir.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from a lot of like heterosexual cis men, like who are like that same thing happened to me. I used to think these things were happening to me because I am gay and I am, I thought that was that was the cause of all of my problems, right? There's a story about Luther Vandross in the book somebody read, a man that I know sort of like tangentially, and he wrote to me and he said that same thing happened to me. He was told, I think this is what he said, but he was told like he shouldn't like Luther Vandross because Luther Vandross was, this way or whatever, Yeah. And I was this is like the a heterosexual cis man with like a wife and kids and all that stuff. But I was shocked to find out like, oh my God, you had almost the same experience that I had, but we have these identities that are supposed to be like, completely different. Right. So again, it's just so gratifying to hear about it. Like there's a story in the book about me going to a place called the Red Caboose and something really bad happening. Somebody wrote to me and said, the same thing happened to me. It wasn't in the Red Caboose. It was a place in Philadelphia. And the exact same story happened to me. And so, when I hear that, I feel like, wow, I'm really happy and glad to know that these things that I thought were only happening to me are not unique to me, and that I was able to speak to somebody else's experience, you know, through talking about my own as well.
Mm. Yeah. And like, I know, well, rather not know, I feel that like the relationship with mother or the women in the family is like, is very specific too, because like my relationship with my mother, like, has evolved. My relationship with my father has not and remained stagnant, for better or for worse, mostly worse. But like with my relationship with my mom has like definitely like evolved over time. And like when I hope I'm remembering correctly, but like when Luther Vandross came up in conversation, it was always like, I, at a young age, was just like, I don't think he likes women. I didn't know what gay was, but I was just like, I felt like, I don't think he likes women. And yeah, it was just like, in my house, it was just like, well, you know, he's gay, right? And everybody's like silence. Nobody knew how to broach that subject.
Yeah.
It's just like, I mean, oh no, he's just like, said he just hasn't married anybody because, like, you know, he hasn't found the right woman yet.
He hasn't found, like, there is no right woman. She does not exist. I just remember people being in flat out denial about it. Like, no, he's not gay, you know, because they liked his music. Right. And they didn't want to be associated with that. You know, now we have like Lil Nas X, who's just like out here on his ass, like, you know, literally, you know, so it has changed. It has changed. And, you know, I wish it would change faster. But these kinds of things they move at a snail's pace, you know, culturally. And I hope that I get to see, you know, more positive change in my lifetime.
And I always found it interesting that, at least in terms of like gender and sexuality within the Black community and like Black media, like, you have some of the most successful artists, like Prince, for example. He like straddled that line, but at the same time, like, Prince was cool, like, because for some reason you knew Prince, or rather you accepted that Prince, he was very straight and very feminine, and like that was like fine for Prince, like, he was never demonized. But like Luther Vandross, who, like, you know, kept his sexuality quiet for his whole time, was just like, I don't know about Luther. But like Prince, it was just like, nah, that's fine. Like Rick James and like all these other people who were like really like flamboyant, but very just like, they still represented this like really masculine,
right,
like heterosexuality.
Right. I think about Little Richard a lot. God rest his soul. But Little Richard, like, for his whole life, he couldn't reconcile his sexuality. Like, he would come out as gay, and then he would be like, no, I'm not gay anymore. I found Jesus. Then he would come out again. I mean, he was like back and forth. I think what torture that must be, you know, to have it in, have this sort of like time bomb instilled in yourself, you know, where you can't even just like say to yourself, like, I am a gay man. Like, you know, somebody has implanted you with their beliefs so deeply that you can't even get to a place where you, you know, can accept yourself. You know, that's what, and I look at Johnny Mathis, and he was like, fuck it, I'm gay, everybody, y'all need to know, you know, and here's my boyfriend. But like Little Richard, who was so talented and so like just vibrant, like he couldn't even reconcile that with himself. So think about what Luther must have gone through. You know, you are the soulful voice of Black America, but you can't even walk down the street, you know, with your boyfriend.
Right.
You know, that sounds like torture to me.
It's wild. And I could be misremembering this, but I swear when I was watching, like, I think it was Oprah. And so, like, but don't quote me on this because I could be misremembering this and made this up completely. Like, even I remember watching an interview with RuPaul when RuPaul was like first like dropped on the scene, where the question was about his sexuality, and he's just like, no, I'm a Black man. And it was just like, okay. And I don't like to like prescribe any type of sexuality to anybody, but I was just like, okay, that's cool. And like, you're gay. But he was implying that, like, since he was a Black man, he couldn't be gay.
Wait, who said this?
RuPaul. Yeah.
Really?
I swear, this is like when he first got celebrity. Mm-hmm. And again, I could be misremembering this.
Well, I mean, if even if you're not misremembering it, it's not like that sentiment is unheard of. You know, it's not like we don't, you know, Black masculinity is different, I think, than any other sort of form of masculinity in our culture. I think in many ways, because of racism, you know, the idea of the Black man as masculine has been doubled down on, you know, because we've been done so dirty, like throughout American history. So you have to be the strongest of the strong, the toughest of the tough, like the most unflappable, the, you know, and we have grown up with these ideas, like, and so it becomes toxic. There is nothing, I mean, people are always like, oh, you're against masculinity. I'm not against masculinity. Like, I'm against this idea that you have to be that, you know, to the sacrifice of everything else that a human being can be, you know? And as far as the qualities of masculinity go, I mean, okay, so you're resilient, you're strong, you take care of your family, you, you know, are there for other people. Hell, women do that every day. So like, what are we talking about? You know, these things are so constructed and we keep them in place for such really nebulous reasons, as far as I'm concerned, that I just, you know, one of the kids today asked me, in this high school asked me, like, are you concerned that, you know, this was his words. He's like, are you concerned as a homosexual that, you know, people don't consider you to be a real man? And I was like, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't care. You know, I don't care if people think I'm a real man or whatever. I don't even really know what that means. So those ideas are still out there. And I hope that we can continue to confront them and tear them down.
Yeah. As someone who also just doesn't give a shit about any of that, like, let people do whatever they want to do. Just get out of people's way. That's really all I got to do. Like, I know, like, you know, certain people will take offense or just like question my sexuality because I like pink and pink is like my favorite color. But it's just like, also, why can't I just like pink? Like,
yeah, just
it's
pink, it's, fuck alone.
It's just so arbitrary. It's just like pink is a color, like, yeah, that's it. And it's a dope color. Like,
yeah, pink is supposed to be for everybody. That's why everybody can see it.
Right. Exactly. You
know? Like, it's just a, I don't know. Some of the things are just so silly that I, you know, the longer I live, the sillier they get, you know, like, you can't do this, you can't wear that, you can't say this, you can't feel that. The older I get, the sillier they feel, you know?
Yeah. That's why I too prefer to live in isolation from everyone. That's why my room is the way it's as decorated as it is. It's like, well, I'm going to be here for a while. So yeah. I'm just going to make it as enjoyable as I possibly can in this little room.
Exactly. It's stressful out there. And like, you know, every time I go out, I'm just like, oh, here we go. You know, and oftentimes, you know, I do enjoy myself. You know, I don't want to make it seem like I'm out there just hating everybody I meet. That's not the case. You know, when I let other Brian take over, other Brian does typically have a good time, but it exhausts Brian. And then I have to lay down for 2 days for 48 hours straight. Like, it's a lot of emotional energy for me to like hang out. For some people, it's super easy. Like my friend Deisha, my friend Deisha wrote a book called Secret Lives of Church Ladies, which is like doing amazing, but she gets on my nerves. Like, she loves people. She loves going out and talking to them and like, and vibing with them and like having a drink with them and just being silly. I mean, she lives for it. I'm like, girl, I don't know how you do this. And she's always inviting me places. I'm like, you know, I ain't going nowhere. Like, come on now.
Yep.
But every once in a while, you know, I'll relent and, you know, I want to be a good friend and I'll like go with her someplace. And I do have a good time when she, you know, luckily I have her to force me to go out and have fun every once in a while. But for the most part, I'm staying at home. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to have friends like that will drag you out of the shell. But like, yeah, the shell is wild cozy.
Oh my God, you should see my setup. It is so, it's not like yours, but like, you know, it is definitely a nice cozy den. I have a cat who jumps up on my lap and, you know, there you have it. I'm in for the night.
Yeah. Pets definitely make it better too.
Absolutely.
So before we close out, is there anything you would like to plug or make people aware of? I would like to give you the opportunity to do so now.
Plug. What do I need to plug? I don't know. I guess the book right now. I have other projects going on, but nothing that's pluggable yet. Mm. Like, they're all still in process. But buy the book, because, you know, I'm trying to buy a house. and also, I think that, I think that people will enjoy it. You know, I think that we, and I say we because my editor is amazing and all the people at HarperCollins who helped me write this book are amazing. I think we wrote a good book, and I think it would resonate with a lot of people.
Mm, yeah, I can definitely second you. You wrote a good book.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a very good book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
No problem. And where can people find you on social media if you're found on social media?
I have a Facebook page, which you could just Google Brian Broom, I guess, Facebook. And I have an Instagram. My Instagram handle is BBROMBA. You can find me on Instagram, keep up with all of my like goings on. But those are my socials. Drop me a line, and talk about writing or whatever you want to talk about, you know?
Cool. Excellent. Yeah. And I'll make sure to have those details in the description of the episode. Last question before we bounce. What is black?
Black is whatever the hell you want it to be. I know you've heard that probably a million times, right? Doing this program, but you know, it is not defined by, I don't think, anything in particular, you know, except being kind to other people who define themselves as black. You know, I think we have learned in this culture to, this culture wants us to hate ourselves, and it wants us to hate other people who look like us. And it finds reasons to pit us against each other. So, you know, black is whatever you want it to be, but it is also accepting of the different experiences and feelings of other black people, and just be kind to one another. You know, it sounds hokey and cliche, but I truly believe that.
Yeah, it may sound cliche, and yet it's still so difficult for people to ascertain.
Yeah, I don't know why people don't get it. I mean, I've spent a long time thinking that I wasn't black enough, or, you know, I wasn't this enough or that enough. But I recognize that, you know, all these sort of labels I have been given don't make a damn bit of difference about in terms of who I am. And so just be yourself and be kind to other black people. You know, we all out here dealing with the same racism in the same culture. So let's just try to be kinder to one another. And that is what black is to me.
Great words to part by. Brian, thank you for taking the time and talking with me and spreading the gospel of being kind.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me. It was an honor speaking with you.
All right, take care.
Don't blow that smoke my way. Don't blow it my way.
All right, cool. I'll contain the smoke. I'll bag it. You might get a package of negative smoke.
Have a good night,
Jake. Take care.
Be sure to grab a copy of the What is Black Mixcast scene at participating businesses and organizations for more in-depth content with all of our guests. Visit whatisblackpodcast.com for a list of distribution points on the regular, as we are always updating. If you'd like to sponsor a distro point or get your hands on a copy, email whatisblackpod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.